Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. As you know, if you've listened to this program, sometimes we like to check in with mobile app developers here in Iowa, and that's what we want to do in this second half of today's show. Talk to an Iowan who's developed an app to further news media literacy, and also have a larger discussion about what news media literacy is in our digital age, how we achieve that literacy. You can join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100. Joining us for this second half hour, Colleen Bradford Krantz, author, documentary filmmaker, a former newspaper reporter, and founder and owner of Skewed News Tutor. Colleen, welcome.
Thank you.
Colleen in our Des Moines studio, also with us in our Ames studio, Leslie Prolly Keene, a technology integration consultant. Hi, Leslie. You are with, who are you with?
I actually work with Prairie Lakes AEA.
At Prairie Lakes AEA, you are a technology integration consultant, going to sit in there as to, in this purpose of this discussion, as our educator. So let's start off with Colleen, because we want to find a little bit about this new app. But before that, Colleen, tell me, as founder and owner of Skewed News Tutor, what that does.
Well, it's a new startup, and what we've done is created this new app called News Tutor. And the idea is to put young people and adults in the role of the journalist. So you're placed in these scenarios where you have to make the decisions that deal with fairness issues or accuracy. And it gets into the real subtle details that separate quality journalism from careless journalism.
Okay, so you've developed this app called, it's called News Tutor.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. What did you see out there as a need that satisfies?
You know, I have kids myself. My oldest is 10, and as a journalist, I'm keenly aware of those subtle things that can take what would otherwise be a good news report and influence how the facts come across. You know, it might be something as subtle as graphics or music or a word you choose in your narration that might be a little bit loaded. And, you know, I'm looking at my kids here thinking, are they going to catch these subtle things that some adults don't catch? Mm-hmm. And I wanted a simple and fun way to sort of put yourself in the head of the journalist and learn those ethical rules in a sense.
So give me an example, if you could, from this new app, News Tutor, of walk us through one exercise.
Okay. For example, we start out and you are in the role of an intern actually starting out, and we place you at a political protest. And as you're there, your first job is going to get some video that will represent this crowd accurately. And you've all seen where you see a shot on the news sometimes of a crowd, and you have no idea how large or small it is based on how tight you move in on the crowd. And so your first job is to pick one of three videos and say which one represents the crowd most accurately. Mm-hmm. And then we'll move on from there. How do you choose which of these three people to interview? And I'll sort of describe different people in the group. What do you do about the person who's walking by protesting? There's a fight and you miss it. Do you ask them to reenact it? Things like that. And that continues through the app in different settings. We deal a little bit with a healthcare one. We have a little science, just kind of different topics.
Mm-hmm. Who's your target audience for this app? Where do you imagine it being used?
Our primary audience is schools, you know, kids 12 and older, high school, middle school, college kids.
Mm-hmm. So, Leslie, you're familiar with this app. Tell me, do you see it being useful in the classroom? Do we need to have part of our curriculum how to become news media literate?
I do, absolutely. What I really love about Colleen's is some of the different aspects that it starts pulling in. So, you know, she mentioned the science and healthcare, and you can start pulling in different curricular areas to really sort of promote the fact that this isn't something we just do in an English classroom or isn't something we just do in a social studies classroom, but giving kids this look at bias and news on a broader spectrum as it's actually going to pertain to their real lives.
Mm-hmm. Leslie, did you share that concern that Colleen mentioned that, you know, our kids these days, and of course many adults, let these techniques wash over us and don't sort of, you know, unless we're perhaps working in the news media, maybe don't even know the techniques that are at work?
I do. You know, I have three children. My older two are 5 and 7. And that's a conversation I've even started having with them at that age is what is out there? What do we put out there? What do we believe? I am dismayed at the number of people on my own Facebook feed that are putting out the, if you click share, Bill Gates will give you $1,000. And people just don't even think about, where is this coming from? What is it? You know, and when it starts relating back to students in the classroom and much bigger stories, that is a definite fear.
We're throwing around this phrase, news media literacy. Colleen, can you give us a definition of what you mean? What is meant by that?
I think a simple way to think of it is to take the news that you're consuming, whether you're reading it or watching it, and try to understand what the core facts are that we're starting with, and think about maybe how the messenger might have either inadvertently or deliberately altered those facts to send a different walkaway message. It's sort of awareness of getting down to those basic facts and trying to sort of solve the riddle of where do we start and what can I believe walking away.
Mm-hmm. But of course, in this digital age, especially in the last couple of decades, we've have emerged tremendously partisan news organizations, right?
Yeah, I think it's become a business model for a number of news organizations, and I find that personally frustrating because I sit here and look at what this is going to do down the road. I think it's human nature to want to hear news from your political point of view. But I think the risk is then we listen to each other less. We almost become less respectful of other views and less willing to even hear them if we don't have to hear them.
I've heard it described this way, and it's always held up when people think about it as perhaps even like a church. The particular news organization you go to in some cases is your media source gives you a lens, and that lens, the people in that media give you a lens through which you can interpret what happens so that no matter what happens, you continue to go to that church.
I think that's exactly right. And I do think it's natural for people to want to do that, but I think there's a great risk in that. And, So especially as you see, when you do have a little isolation from people or distance from people, I should say, in the social media world. And so it's easier to let that come through in your interactions also, mm-hmm. that sort of disrespect for each other's views.
One of the ways in which news is skewed, would you agree, Colleen, is that it's just actually the editorial choice of which items to cover. News is actually created by news organizations in a certain sense, and that we choose what to cover and what not to cover. How do you address that skewing of the news?
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I do have to say that that's been an issue always, as you know. And so I don't want to present that as a new issue because as long as we've had media outlets, there's been people making decisions about what is newsworthy. And I don't know that there's really an answer. It's not ever going to be a perfect system. But I will say that the beauty of the world today is this huge range of voices. You know, it's not always journalists, but this availability of so many sources of information, whether it's, scientists tweeting something directly or doctors having a blog, journalists having their own ways to reach out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just such a bigger range of voices, I guess.
Leslie, as an educator, do you see this as really being able to will this find its niche, this education, this awareness, this sort of news media literacy in different sorts of sections in a class? It doesn't need a whole section for itself, right?
Not at this point. I think we really focus on it in digital literacies, which will go across all content areas. And part of that is being, sort of an aware consumer of that information. But just as much as that, Colleen mentioned, it's not just journalists who are putting this information out there. Part of my platform, maybe in the classroom, was student voice and students creating and students putting things out there. And just as much as journalists have this responsibility, we have a responsibility to teach kids what is accurate information? How do you share this in an unbiased way? How can you share an opinion without attacking people if it's in a comment section and those sorts of things?
Mm-hmm. What about fact-checking, Colleen? That's a problem. That's a challenge.
Fact-checking, yes, I agree. There's so much information coming out that is not always checked. And I think most journalists try to do that, but as there's that pressure to be first and get the first tweet out or whatever. It's there's that really strong temptation to go ahead when you maybe don't have a second confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like to say, well, it will eventually sort itself out, which is true. But in the meantime, there's some problems that can arise from misinformation, and people can be hurt from that.
Colleen and Leslie, as we're on the topic of fact-checking, this is an interesting prank that recently happened. You may recognize this story. Demonstrates exactly what we're talking about. Last month, late-night host Jimmy Kimmel secretly uploaded a video of a young girl, actually a young woman, twerking this dance called twerking. And she actually does this dance and then stands on her hands against the door, I think, with her legs against the door. Someone comes in the door. She falls onto a table that's with candles and actually starts on fire, literally going up in flames, and then the video suddenly stops. Now, it wasn't until about a month later that Jimmy Kimmel revealed that the video was fake. It was all staged, done by their producers and a stunt woman. But by this point, the video had got 9 million views in less than a week. Hundreds of media outlets had reported the incident as fact. Let's listen to a little bit of the Jimmy Kimmel Show when he's revealing his prank.
Some people even blamed Miley Cyrus as if this was her fault. But this is just a sampling of some of the many, many media outlets who fell for our little prank.
For this segment, we thought we just had to trot out this video because apparently it's everywhere.
The first time I saw it, viral video, 2 million views. It now has 8 million. The girl in this video was trying to make a sexy twerk video for her boyfriend.
Check out this twerker. Girl on fire.
Watch how a twerking girl literally sets herself on fire.
She catches on fire. That girl was on fire.
Now the internet is on fire.
And it goes on and on. The many, many examples Jimmy Kimmel put together of news organizations swallowing up this story as fact. What does this tell you, Colleen?
Well, I think it's embarrassing for a journalist a little bit. I mean, if we can't sort the fact from fiction, how
or
are kids supposed
don't
to?
Don't even bother. It's just pulled off
right.
of YouTube, right?
Right. You know, I heard somebody say once there's so many more sources of news, but I think the problem is so many are just regurgitating. So I don't know that we're really gaining people who are going out there and doing full solid reporting and, you know, checking the facts before they spread it. It's a lot of regurgitation. And yeah, it's a little, I mean, I found that amusing because it is a little bit, it makes a good point.
Leslie, do you see this as a point which kids, everybody's, people would look at this with a more skeptical eye and say, is this really true?
I would hope that people would understand that late night comedy has some sort of, you know, this entertainment value and that you would look at it with a more skeptical eye. One of the things
But they didn't know at first. So it was launched. It was not launched on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. It was simply put out there and they made this, we didn't play the part where they explained, they simply made this YouTube video, put it quietly out on YouTube, and it caught fire. Viral video within a week, 9 million viewers. So it did not start out on the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Only when it was revealed. Right. So go on. I'm sorry.
Oh, and, you know, I guess so in the classroom where that really comes in and anymore, you have to take things at, you know, what sort of value, where did this start? But in the classroom, we use that end product as a teachable moment. We go back and look at how this happened. A much more tragic example when the Sandy Hook occurred and they were reporting the wrong name as the shooter. But that turned into a teachable moment where we can start talking with students about how do we know, where did these facts come from, who's checking these, what, you know, what value does that have, or what lessons do we need to look at as we continue to share information.
Colleen, I wonder, we have certainly many, many more sources of news than we did several decades ago, but are people consuming more news and consuming it more intelligently than before?
I think they're shifting where they're going for their news anyway. And, you know, it's kind of like they're it's with them all the time. You know, I think there's the term grazing. They're grazing the media a little more. You know, we have our phones with us often and we might jump online and run across news and anywhere from, you know, a traditional news source to Facebook. And so, yeah, I think there's it's still a big presence in our lives compared to what some people might expect.
I'm looking at 12 trends collected by the Pew Research Center on our rapidly changing digital news landscape, and one of them jumps out. Please comment on the growth of social media as a source for news. According to the Pew Research Center, 19% of Americans saw news on a social network yesterday. That was in 2012. That's more than double the 9% had said the same to that same question in 2010. So social media growing as a news source, also Pew focusing in on Facebook, finding that most adults do not go to Facebook seeking news, but in this survey of over 5,000 adults, the vast majority of Facebook news consumers, 78%, get news when they're on Facebook. So another way to say it is it's a good way to find out news without looking for it, I guess, Colleen.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other interesting part in that is that, you know, a lot of people say, I think it was maybe a third said they would want a political opinion thrown in with that news they're getting. And so the majority do not want that. And but I'm guessing they're getting it, though. You know, you'll see these usually when people point you to a news site, they insert their opinion in the comment section with it, you know. And sometimes it's pretty neutral, but usually not, because they usually have strong feelings regarding that. So, you know, that's another thing to consider is here they're presenting it. And it's, you know, you might be already altering how you think about the news story before you even start reading it.
And then we have, of course, online news having the comments section, so that whether you're at whatever website you're at, most websites have their article or the video that you watch, the news, and then you are allowed to respond to it. Comment on that, Colleen, because you can get a skewed sense of our world and the people we live with in our communities by looking at that. At least I do.
Yeah, I agree. It's I think those comments can range as much as the population can, and as far as how they express themselves, you know, whether it's intelligently or not, and whether they're sometimes it feels like they're not even reading what they're commenting on, which I don't understand. But it seems like it's all over the place. And so sometimes they can be valuable, but a lot of times I'm not thinking there are so much.
Right. Leslie, as an educator, what do you think about the interactive nature of digital news today?
I love the interactive nature because I see so many kids, people who wouldn't have a voice otherwise, someone who isn't comfortable having this conversation, you know, verbally or in public, but is able to share their opinion in a written manner. However, I think you come back to that danger of when people can hide behind a screen, you start getting these, you know, horrible comments and things that are unrelated and maybe even not true. But that's that conversation that we have about being a good digital citizen and why that's so important, you know, even from kindergarten on up.
Mm-hmm. You're an educator, but also a mother, Leslie. You've taught social science, technology to middle and high schoolers. I believe you have three children?
I do.
Uh-huh. So tell me about the conversations you have when you are sitting in front of the tablet with the kids. I want to say sitting in front of the TV, but it could be just as likely sitting in front of the tablet these days, right?
Yeah, usually my kids are in front of their iPads, and we actually have started over the last few months tweeting and blogging so that they're having an opportunity to share their voice and to share their stories. Because even at five, obviously not with my six-month-old, but even at 5 and 7, my kids have things that are important to them and voices and stories that they want to share. And they are getting that now with me in a very guided way about what's appropriate to share, what's safe to share, what sorts of things, you know, might they be interested in and how can we build on that?
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that is very important to me to build in from, like I said, from that kindergarten age on up, because the more they have in that early on, the more likely they'll be to be these discerning consumers of information later.
Do you have a any kind of story from home, Leslie, that you can point to, a conversation with one of your kids about something you found online?
Oh, gosh. My daughter follows people like Gabby Douglas and Shawn Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So she's in gymnastics, and that's where she gets a lot of this information. So she's been following those people, and so her news is very sort of directed to things that they're sharing. So if it's a big event, Shawn Johnson might comment on it, or Gabby Douglas might comment on it. If it's not, her news revolves around, you know, prep for worlds and things like that. So it sort of is a very small example of people getting news from the sources that they follow.
And Colleen, tell us more about, is your app actually being used in any classrooms, News Tutor?
Yeah, we've tried it out in a few classrooms, but it's brand new. It literally was released, the final version, I guess, was released in the last week or so.
Mm-hmm. And available on iPhone and iPad?
That's right. And
so far not on Android?
Not yet. We hope eventually. Mm-hmm. But it's, yeah, we'd like to see it used in classrooms, and we'd love feedback from teachers.
Have you had any feedback so far?
Yeah, the majority of the feedback so far is that you know, just the importance of this, and hopefully it fits into some of the, you know, the teachers have to think a lot about the Common Core goals. And so we've built in some vocabulary and lessons on inferring, and that sort of mix of disciplines is really getting good feedback, too, so far.
Okay. Thank you very much. Colleen Bradford Krantz, author, documentary filmmaker, former newspaper reporter, and founder and owner of Skewed News Tutor. Where can people find that on the web?
They could go to newstutor.us.
Okay, Colleen, thank you very much. Leslie Prawley-Keene, thank you.
Technology, thank you.
Technology Integration Consultant at Prairie Lakes AEA. It's been great to have your views as an educator. Thank you both.
Thanks.
Tomorrow on this program, I hope we'll tune in. We'll have another News Buzz edition of our program. This week's police chase and shooting death in Ames has raised many questions. We'll look into that. As we look into the death of a 19-year-old Tyler Comstock in that incident in Ames. Also, with Veterans Day just around the corner, we'll learn about two men who served and died in World War II and the other one in Vietnam. They'll be honored next week at the Iowa State University's Gold Star Hall ceremony. That and plenty more. Hope you'll tune in for a News Buzz edition of our program tomorrow at this time. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. In Ames, help from Jason Burns. And in Des Moines, John Pemble helped us out. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.